question mark tattooed upon his forehead. His cheeks and brow were mottled with pale green. Next to him was the altogether leaner frame of Jota Sivaraksa. It was no surprise that Dr. Sivaraksa should be here today, for the Moat Project was one of the most significant activities of the entire Snowflake Council. His iron-gray eyes flashed this way and that, as if constantly triangulating the positions of enemies and allies alike. The group was accompanied by armed, ceremonially dressed proctors and a triad of martial servitors. Their articulation points and sensor apertures were lathered in protective, sterile grease to guard against rot. Though they tried to hide it, Naki could tell that the VIPs were nervous. They moved a touch too confidently, making their trepidation all the more evident. The red door symbol at the end of the gangway pulsed brighter, and a section of the hull puckered open. Naki squinted, but even through the binoculars it was difficult to make out anything other than red-lit gloom. Taktonburi and his officials stiffened. A sketchy figure emerged from the shuttle, lingered on the threshold, and then stepped with immense slowness into full sunlight. The crowd's reaction, and to some extent Naki's own, was double-edged. There was a moment of relief that the messages from orbit had not been outright lies. Then there was an equally brief tang of shock at the actual appearance of Captain Moreau. The man was at least a third taller than anyone Naki had ever seen in her life, and yet commensurately thinner, his seemingly brittle frame contained within a jade-colored mechanical exoskeleton of ornate design. The skeleton lent his movements something of the lethargic quality of a stick insect. Taktonburi was the first to speak. His amplified voice boomed out across the six arms of Umingmaktok, echoing off the curved surfaces of the multiple vacuum bladders that held the city aloft. Float cams jostled for the best camera angle, swarming around him like pollen-crazed bees. "Captain Moreau, may I introduce myself? I am Taktonburi, mayor of Umingmaktok Snowflake City and incumbent chairman of the Snowflake Council of All Turquoise. It is my pleasure to welcome you, your crew and passengers to Umingmaktok and to Turquoise itself. You have my word that we will do all in our power to make your visit as pleasant as possible." The Ultra moved closer to the official. The door to the shuttle remained open behind him. Naki's binocs picked out red hologram serpents on the jade limbs of the skeleton. The Ultra's own voice boomed at least as loud, but emanated from the shuttle rather than Umingmaktok's public address system. "People of greenish blue," the captain hesitated, then tapped one of the stalks projecting from his helmet. "People of turquoise, Chairman Tonburi, thank you for your welcome and for your kind permission to assume orbit. We have accepted it with gratitude. You have my word, as captain of the Light-Hugger Voice of Evening, that we will abide by the strict terms of your generous offer of hospitality." His mouth continued to move even during the pauses, Naki noticed. The translation system was lagging. "You have my additional guarantee that no harm will be done to your world, and turquoise law will be presumed to apply to the occupants of all bodies and vessels in your atmosphere. All traffic between my ship and your world will be subject to the authorization of the Snowflake Council, and any member of the Council will, under the auspices of the Council, be permitted to visit the Voice of Evening at any time, subject to the availability of a suitable conveyance." The captain paused and looked at Taktonburi expectantly. The mayor wiped a nervous hand across his brow, smoothing his kiss curl into obedience. "Thank you, Captain." Taktonburi's eyes flashed to the other members of the reception party. "Your terms are, of course, more than acceptable. You have my word that we will do all in our power to assist you and your crew, and that we will do our utmost to ensure that the forthcoming negotiations of trade proceed in an equitable manner, and in such a way that both parties will be satisfied upon their conclusion." The captain did not respond immediately, allowing an uncomfortable pause to draw itself out. Naki wondered if it was really the fault of the software, or whether Moreau was just playing on Taktonburi's evident nervousness. "Of course," the Ultra said finally, Of course. My sentiments entirely, Chairman Tonburi. Perhaps now wouldn't be a bad time to introduce my guests. On his cue, three new figures emerged from the Voice of Evening's shuttle. Unlike the Ultra, they could almost have passed for ordinary citizens of Turquoise. There were two men and one woman, all of approximately normal height and build. They all had long hair, tied back in elaborate clasps. Their clothes were brightly colored, fashioned from many separate fabrics of yellow, orange, red, and russet, and various permutations of the same warm sunset shades. The clothes billowed around them, rippling in the light afternoon breeze. All three members of the party wore silver jewelry, far more than was customary on Turquoise. They wore it on their fingers, in their hair, hanging from their ears. The woman was the first to speak, her voice booming out from the shuttle's PA system. "Thank you, Captain Moreau. Thank you also, Chairman Tonburi. We are delighted to be here. I am Amisha Crane, and I speak for the Vahishta Foundation. Vahishta's a modest scientific organization with its origins in the cometary prefectures of the Haven Demarchy. Lately, we have been expanding our realm of interest to encompass other solar systems, such as this one." Crane gestured at the two men who had accompanied her from the shuttle. "My associates are Simon Matsubara and Raphael Weir. There are another 17 of us aboard the shuttle. Captain Moreau carried us here as paying passengers aboard the Voice of Evening, and as such, Vahishta gladly accepts all the terms already agreed upon." Tak Tonburi looked even less sure of himself. "Of course, we welcome your interest. A scientific organization, did you say?" "One with a special interest in the study of the jugglers," Amisha Crane answered. She was the most strikingly attractive member of the trio, with fine cheekbones and a wide, sensual mouth that always seemed on the point of smiling or laughing. Naki felt that the woman was sharing something with her, something private and amusing. Doubtless everyone in the crowd felt the same vague sense of complicity. Crane continued, "We have no pattern jugglers in our own system, but that hasn't stopped us from focusing our research on them, collating the data available from the worlds where juggler studies are ongoing. We've been doing this for decades, sifting inference and theory, guesswork and intuition. Haven't we, Simon?" The man nodded. He had sallow skin and a fixed, quizzical expression. "No two juggler worlds are precisely alike," Simon Matsubara said, his voice as clear and confident as the woman's. "And no two juggler worlds have been studied by precisely the same mix of human sociopolitical factions. That means that we have a great many variables to take into consideration. Despite that, we believe we have identified similarities that may have been overlooked by the individual research teams. They may even be very important similarities with repercussions for wider humanity. But in the absence of our own jugglers, it is difficult to test our theories. That's where Turquoise comes in." The other man, Naki recalled his name as Raphael Weir, began to speak. "Turquoise has been largely isolated from the rest of human space for the better part of two centuries." "We're aware of this," said Jota Sivaraksa. It was the first time any member of the entourage other than Tak Tonburi had spoken. To Naki, he sounded irritated, though he was doing his best to hide it. "You don't share your findings with the other juggler worlds," said Amisha Crane. "Nor, to the best of our knowledge, do you intercept their cultural transmissions. The consequence is that your research on the jugglers has been untainted by any outside considerations, the latest fashionable theory, the latest groundbreaking technique. You prefer to work in scholarly isolation." "We're an isolationist world in other respects," Tak Tonburi said. "Believe it or not, it actually rather suits us." "Quite," Crane said, with a hint of sharpness. "But the point remains. Your jugglers are an uncontaminated resource. When a swimmer enters the ocean, their own memories and personality may be absorbed into the juggler sea. The prejudices and preconceptions that swimmer carries inevitably enter the ocean in some shape or form, diluted, confused, but nonetheless present in some form. And when the next swimmer enters the sea and opens their mind to communion,